Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you once again to talk about what really was overall a positive week for your Golden Eagles. Two wins, one expected, one maybe we were a tad nervous about. But, Phil, I guess we'll probably start with the Kansas State game since that makes the most sense. And, you know, Kansas State maybe not a great opponent as far as compared to other Power 5 schools or Power Conference schools, excuse me. But I will take a road win over a power conference school any day of the week. Where do you want to start on the Kansas State game?
Well, listen, anytime you can get a win on the road in a venue that has the nickname the Octagon of Doom, you got to be satisfied with a win, any kind of win. I think I want to start with, hey, maybe this team isn't just Marcus Howard. I mean, that seems like a positive place to start, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, that can even go back to the Jacksonville game because Marcus Howard had to sit that game out in the concussion protocol. Hopefully that's not a long-term issue we have to be concerned with. You never know with head injuries or whatnot, but he was good to go with Kansas State, so hopefully that is past him. But I will say about the Jacksonville game, you know, we'll kind of be bouncing back and forth, I guess, between Jacksonville and Kansas State as we kind of go through the pod here today. But, you know, the first half was good, and Wojciechowski himself called the second half against Jacksonville atrocious, so it wasn't all great. But the fact that Marquette had to win a game, albeit against not a great opponent, without Marcus Howard maybe gave some other guys a chance to shine a little bit. Some other guys knew they had to step up, and they did for the most part. And I think that continued into the Kansas State game with Jamal Cain playing as well as he did. We also had a couple nice games from Sakar. Hopefully, as we've said many times before, it's not like we don't want Marcus Howard not shooting, but the more you can get contributions from other guys, the better you're going to feel about the Big East, because, you know, Marcus Howard is going to run in some better defenders in Big East play than he has in non-conference play, and some of them are going to lock him up pretty good and just dare other people to beat him. But, a couple of good games from Sakar. And then a real nice game from Jamal Cain on Saturday against Kansas State. So, yeah, I think that is a nice place to start. I wouldn't say we solidly have that number two and three scoring option, but as long as somebody can jump in any given game, it's like those four or five guys we're always talking about, Phil, whether it's Sakar, Greg Elliott, Brendan Bailey, Kobe McEwen, Jamal Cain, one of those guys maybe jumping in and having a nice game offensively. It would be nice if, you know, one of them or two of them are consistently scoring 15 plus, but, you know, I guess we'll take what we can get at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we asked in the previous pod, like, are Brendan Bailey and Sakar, are they flash or are they going to be more consistent? I think Sakar at this point, you know, obviously it can still turn to the negative somewhere along the way. But this is now a handful of games, five, six games in a row where Sakar has been a very consistent, reliable offensive threat, you know, and he's always been very good on the defensive end. So while you're right, he may not be the clear-cut number two option every single game, I think he's established himself as someone that will be there pretty consistently. And then Bailey and Cain, you know, so you're getting production out of the two. Theoretically, you know, or the 2-3, theoretically you're getting production out of Marcus, and then you're getting production out of the four spot in the form of Cain and or Bailey. And man, Cain, I don't know what it was about Kansas State, but if he can bottle that up for the rest of the season, that was epic. Like he had quite frankly, Ed Morrow stole a double-double from him with a last rebound in the very last free throw miss that Kansas State had. Otherwise, Cain would have had a well-deserved double-double. And it was, I mean, he was doing it all. It was threes, it was putbacks, it was rebounds, it was defense. It was probably the most complete game we've seen from Cain in his career at Marquette.
Yeah, 17-9 for Jamal Cain and 33 minutes played. And that's an encouraging sign. Brennan Bailey, I guess, was on the bench quite a bit. He had foul trouble. Brennan never really got going in the Kansas State game, but Jamal stepped up big time. And one thing I've liked about Jamal Cain for more than a year now is his rebounding ability. Seems like anytime he gets some extended run, he's always going to fly in for a rebound you're not expecting him to get. And I think he crashes the boards very well for a guy who really isn't considered a front court player. And he's tall. He's listed at 6'7". But I think most people look at Jamal Cain as a perimeter player. But I think he boards very well for a guy who's looked at as mostly a three. But yeah, great game for him. He's shooting the ball with relative confidence, I think, and he had that great follow dunk when absolutely nobody boxed him out, and you know, that's an easy play for him when absolutely no one is around him. He'll jump up and throw that thing down with ease. So, again, I kind of said this in the last podcast about sometimes we'll have a Jamal Cain game, sometimes we'll have a Brendan Bailey game, sometimes we'll have a Greg Elliott game. This was a Jamal Cain game. Are we going to get 17-9 from him every night? Probably not. Could we maybe hope for something like 10-5 every night? I think that would be very encouraging and something that would be nice to depend on going forward. But as we have, you know, as we get, we're at 9 games into the season at this point, as we continue to look at the three-point numbers, you know, as pessimistic as I was about this team's ability to shoot outside of Marcus Howard, a lot of guys are sitting at 35% or better right now.
Right.
In various sample sizes, but I think I'm getting cautiously optimistic there are enough shooters around Marcus to maybe space the floor a little bit more for him and hopefully get him more looks, because I still think, you know, Marcus didn't have a bad game necessarily against Kansas State, but he had 19 points.
It was a pretty quiet 19, though.
Yeah, it was a quiet 19 points, but, you know, teams are always, until these other players consistently break out and shoot from deep, they're always going to go with the kind of the strategy of, look, we're just going to guard the hell out of Marcus Howard and just dare these other guys to beat him. And this week, that's essentially what happened. You know, Howard got his. He shot the ball pretty well. You know, he got his points. He got his 19 points. But Sakar attacked the basket with confidence, and we mentioned Jamal Cain. So, but I you know, no one is breaking out as that stud 2 or 3 scorer, but there are options there that I'm hoping can continue to take steps forward as we. And we got a few bye games to kind of, I guess, just see what happens. But we'll see where these guys are when we get to Big East play. But I'm not saying where Marquette is where we would love them to be offensively, but I'm not pessimistic about where they're going either.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. You know, and it goes back to a question you asked early in the season, and this is why it's important never to overreact too high or too low early in the non-conference season. But the offense is starting to get some flow, right? Like, you know, I still think there was a stretch there, you know, maybe with 10 minutes to go in the Davidson game, maybe they kind of snapped out of it. But the offense looked like garbage for a while, and certainly can regress to that from time to time. But Kansas State is a very solid defensive team, and you know, officiating being rocky, you know, for both teams, right? It was kind of bad officiating both ways, and in fact, probably favorable.
It was tough to get through that second half. I'm not going to lie, it was not a fun game to watch. Kansas State,
right? But all that aside, the offense have at least looked like it had purpose and intent and thoughtfulness, right? Like it wasn't just people running around. There looked like there was intent to the offense. And so that's one of the big encouraging things is I think the offense can continue to get better as we go. And the defense is already solid. So, I mean, I think there's reason to be hopeful that this Marquette team can still achieve the ceiling we talked about at the preview pod, right? They could still be in line for, you know, a top four seed, right?
Well, that may be a little high, but I wouldn't rule that out necessarily. I'd like to see them against a few better teams in the Big East. I'm a little worried that Kansas State might be a team that is completely out of the tournament picture by the time they get deep in the Big 12 play. Their forecast on KenPom is not great. And like, again, right. I'm not totally crapping on the win. I'm just saying, look, we did not beat a top three, top four Big 12 team on Saturday.
I agree
with what you said about the offense. Is, you know, maybe early, sometimes in the first few games, it kind of looked like, let's see if Marcus is going to cook, and if he's not, well, now we got to figure out in these something else in these last 15 seconds of the shot clock. But, yeah, there was a little more flow, a little more guys looking for their shots confidently. You know, Brendan Bailey was. He foul trouble really never let him get going, but I think more guys are looking to score when they have good looks, but still not forgetting about Marcus. What would you make about the tough week Kobe McEwen has? Because he was visibly frustrated in the Jacksonville game, didn't really shoot the ball well in the Kansas State game either. You just saying bad week, or is there a tiny reason for concern with him?
You know, I think it, if you go all the way back to the Orlando Invitational, because he also really struggled in the Orlando Invitational. Granted, it's not necessarily with, you know, games we saw, right? He had a great Purdue game and a couple of games early in the season, but he's got a track record. We know he's got the capability. Yes, it was at Utah State, but I have every confidence he's had the capability. Just for whatever reason, he is up in his head, which is really what I think it is. I don't think it's a physical thing. I'm also hoping that the last 5 minutes, you know, he had a pretty disastrous first 35 minutes between the fouling and turnovers and just visible body language issues, where I was even tweeting that, you know, Wojo had to come get his boy there because he was, you know, I don't know what he was going to do if he had tried to get that fight going, after Theo yeah. got the elbow on him or whatever. But, like, I just – the last 5 minutes, he kind of came out of his shell, right? Hit a clutch three, hit clutch free throws, possessed the ball, didn't turn it over. Maybe he carries that forward, gets 10 days off to clear his head. But I just think he's pressing right now. I'm not concerned, like, he's going to fall apart. This isn't a Chartouni thing. I just think he's got to get out of his head.
Yeah, and he's got – I did notice, you know, Symer Torrence got some run this week, you know, mainly because of Kobe's foul trouble, but I think that is a guy you would like to see, you know, just ready if needed. I'm not saying you got to bench Kobe, but I do like seeing Symer Torrence get a little run, get a little confidence. I don't think he's going to be an impact player this season necessarily, but I do like to see him getting out there and maybe starting to get his feet wet as far as playing major college basketball, because it's a step up from what he was doing a year ago.
Yeah, well, and I also think, like, that just makes you feel better about depth, right? I mean, we had some fairly substantial foul trouble there in the Kansas State game, or at least it started to get that way, and we've got depth at the five, right? We've got a three-headed monster in theory. You've got Kane and Bailey that can play the four. You know, you've got some depth that, you know, and one of those guys can slide down and play the three if necessary for depth. And you got Sakar. If Kobe can get his head on right, between he and Torrence and Marcus, we've got the 1/2, you know, covered. So there's a lot of depth there. So I think Torrence proved he belongs in the Big East, right, or in college Division I college basketball, right? He's a viable entity there. We'll see. His minutes will probably go down as the Big East starts off, especially if McEwen gets his head on straight. But
yeah, I think he's a big part of the future for sure. But right. Yeah, I think I guess all I'm saying is it's nice to get him some run. Hopefully, gets some more run in these bye games Marquette has coming up. And then, again, I kind of agree with you. As Marquette gets to some tight games in Big East play, he probably won't play as much. But it's good to know he's there and gaining a little confidence if he is needed more, if Kobe has some more struggles. And they've got 10 days off. There's no game this coming week because I guess they're taking finals this week.
Yeah.
And then they get back at it on the 17th against Grambling.
Are you worried about McEwen at all?
No, not really. I'm just going to say it's a bad week and it's frustrating. He just got a little frustrated and taking a step back, like maybe just focusing on finals this week and then getting back at it against some bye opponents where Marquette should rattle off three relatively easy wins before getting into Big East play on January 1st. I think he'll get right, because I think we've seen Kobe at his best. I think he's just been a little flustered lately because his shot hasn't been falling the way he wants it to. Maybe some turnovers have frustrated him as well, but I think he's going to get right. I'm not, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being freak out time, maybe I'm at a 4 on Kobe. I'm not nowhere near saying it's time to bench him or anything like that. Yeah, I think he's just frustrated and had a bad week, and I think he'll be fine. So I'm not freaking out about Kobe. Just want your thoughts on a rough week for Kobe, because I think that's something people were kind of tweeting about after he was frustrated a little bit last week. You mentioned the depth at the five and the four. Can we declare that the two big lineup is mostly a myth? Or
yeah,
something, maybe at most
like
we will see
screen,
situationally,
right?
If like there's some spot where the opponent has two bigs, or there's a spot where Marquette needs to get a big rebound after a free throw. Other than that, I think the idea that Marquette is going to consistently run out two bigs that we were kind of speculating in the preseason, I think I'm ready to call that dead, call that a myth, because I think Wojo, and I agree with it, is more comfortable running out Bailey and Kane as undersized fours to kind of spread the floor. Would you say that the two big lineup is more of a situational thing than a strategy?
I actually think at this point it may have been just smokescreen. I don't know why, but like I just don't see what purpose it solves. Maybe it was a hedge because Wojo saw, you know, Kane and Bailey hit, you know, shooting threes in practice and was a little concerned that they couldn't hit at the 35% rate. But like you said, we've got a half a dozen players that are hitting threes at 35% or better. If you're getting that out of your one through four positions, I don't think you need the two big lineup. It doesn't make sense because Kane and Bailey are certainly capable of guarding at the four.
And Kane rebounds like a four.
Exactly. So if the only concern was their ability to produce points at the four, well, you know, from an effective field goal percentage, you know, missing a couple of threes is you know, just fine as long as you're hitting a couple, because that balances out with twos that you'd have somebody like a Jace Johnson or an Ed Morrow trying to shoot from 5 feet out in a double big lineup. So, yeah, I think it's dead.
Yeah, I think I kind of agree with maybe something that was kind of thrown out there when people saw the roster and they didn't see they really didn't see a four on the roster. Like, well, I guess that's what they're going to do. But you know, looking at, you know, on, for those of you not familiar with KenPom, you go to a team page and you can scroll down and you can see a team's most frequently used lineups over the last 5 games, and it's like the 10 most popular, most used lineups. And none of them have either John Morrow or Johnson at the four. It's all the lineups have either Bailey or Jamal Kane at the four. So, yeah, I for all the hand-wringing over running out two bigs in this perimeter-oriented era of college basketball, I don't think that's going to happen. I think Bailey and Kane have shown enough that they're going to get plenty of run at the four, and that's going to be what Marquette's going to run with, and I'm good with it because for the most part, I've really liked what I've seen from Bailey and Kane, and I'm happy for Jamal Kane especially, because he's a guy who, at similar players and similar circumstances, probably would have transferred in his spot maybe a year or so ago when he wasn't being a top 50, 60 prospect who wasn't getting a lot of run and was being asked to play out of position. A lot of guys like him may have looked for other opportunities, but he is stuck with the Marquette program. Not to say that transferring is always a bad move. Sometimes it's a good move for some kids. But Jamal Kane's opted to stick with Marquette and fill his role as he is asked to do. And he's done it well. And I was happy to see him get some run and take advantage of it. And I hope that continues for him and for Brendan Bailey, because I think they're doing a nice job picking up what was lost in the offseason for Marquette.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it's. I mean, Kane's come on steady throughout the season, so you're really happy for him and sticking with the program and seems to like kind of epitomize what you want out of a Marquette player, right? Like hard worker, figures it out. He's, you know, he can be flashy, but you know, can do the things. And when you look at it from a development standpoint, I mean, in the first 2 years. Kane had a real short leash for whatever reason, Wojo had a real short leash with him. You know, he'd make a mistake and he'd go sit on the bench. And now Kane, you know, the Kansas State game, I mean, I'm sure there were mistakes here and there, but you know, Kane got 33 minutes, he second most behind Sakar for minutes played in that Kansas State game, which goes to show you just how much Wojo has come to trust and appreciate him.
And his rebounding numbers, percentage-wise, are comparable to Theo Johns, honestly. You know, he rebounds offensively at 8% rate, where Johns at 9%, and Kane is around 20% defensive rebounding percentage, which is actually better than Theo John percentage-wise. Actually, the best on the team. Oh, no, Jace Johnson is better. Jace Johnson's rebounding numbers are actually pretty crazy.
He's a really good rebounder.
Yeah, I think Jace is really carving out some time for himself. I really love his effort on the glass. I don't think he'll ever be an offensive threat for this team, but the effort he puts in the paint, I think, has been a really nice addition. I think a lot of people were skeptical of him, not necessarily talking about his talent, but just the fit. Because, again, we were saying there are too many bigs and we're going to run a two-big lineup. But I think he has proven to be a nice role player for this team. Yeah, he probably could have gone to a lot of other schools and gotten the lion's share of the minutes at the five. But I really like what Johnson has brought to the table for Marquette as a very active rebounder.
Yeah, for sure. Now, the one thing, I mean, I don't think we necessarily want him out there at the end of games because those two free throws were not great. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, speaking of the end of the game, I guess I'll say a touch concerned with Marcus in that at the end of that game against Kansas State, they were seemingly begging us to take the whole shot clock with 2 minutes to go. I don't know what their strategy was exactly, but you know, Marcus has seemed to repeat. We saw it at the end of last season in that, you know, that string of six games that we lost where Marcus dominates the ball and then just kind of does, I don't know if it's too much or does something crazy or what it is, but like there were two possessions at the end of that Kansas State game where, you know, I think the one that stuck out was Howard drove with, you know, maybe 8 seconds off the shot clock, 2 minutes left on the game clock, and we were up by like seven and drove into the lane and then hit some or tried to shoot some weird pull up and Kansas State got a run out. Did you notice that? Is that an area of concern for you?
Honestly, I don't think I might have to rewind the tape to remember what you're exactly what you're referencing. Yeah, you may have to describe it to me just a little bit better. Like, they just basically were daring him to drive or just daring him to...
No. I mean, they weren't... Marcus just decided, like, when we should have been bleeding the clock, when we should have just been killing as much clock as possible, get it under 2 minutes, all of a sudden Marcus just went into superhero Marcus and decided to drive willy-nilly and then had to pull up for a crazy shot, and we took 10, maybe 11 seconds off the shot clock before we turned it over to Kansas State, who got a run out going the other way. It was just like it was hurried for no good reason, and it was not a productive use of offense, right? He tried to create all by himself, and it wasn't
okay.
Wasn't
there, see, now it's sounding a little more familiar. I'm just going to chalk that up to brain fart. It's just maybe he wasn't thinking that's something Wojo was probably talking to him when they're looking at film this week. Say, hey, let's not do that again.
I've seen it a number of times now from Marcus late in games, especially he did it against Villanova last year where they lost on the road when they should have won, and there's another game maybe Seton Hall, I can't remember, but anyway, just it seems like late.
You're concerned about some late game hero ball is basically what you're
saying.
Yes,
correct. Yep.
That's I guess maybe that can always be a concern when you've got a guy who can score like Marcus, who is so confident and can usually hit shots like that and is kind of always looking to make the big play because that's what his team depends on. I wouldn't think too much of it and freak out about it, especially as his teammates continue to show their capabilities to support him on the perimeter and hit outside shots and more guys are willing to score. It's just maybe a matter of him and the team figuring out which guy is on tonight and who's the guy who can get the ball if I can't get my shot off. So
yeah,
that, you know,
fair.
Maybe the hero ball late in games last season led to some of the frustration that kind of boiled over with the team in the last month of the season.
Yeah.
Kind of led to the ugly finale. But then again, let's not forget, Marcus was, he was a little banged up there, and I think that affected how maybe some of his struggles late last season. But again, I can understand maybe the concern with the mentality, but as I've said before, I always want Marcus looking to shoot. But maybe a situationally there when you're trying to just run out the clock and win the game, yeah, maybe that's something you would like him to be a little more mindful of, especially as a senior, and I'm sure that will be something that is addressed in film session this week.
Yeah, hopefully it was something that stuck out to me late at the game. But we'll keep an eye on it, and I'll keep my hand off the panic button for the time being.
Yeah, the thing is, we're probably not going to learn too much about this team over the next three games. We have, again, no game this week, so I don't think we're going to break down any of the bye games in this podcast. Maybe we'll touch base on that when we check in next week. You want to break down the finals? You know, the test the guys are taking this week, Phil? Anything like that?
I'm sure they're communications finals, and I'm sure they're
Hey, don't let's not insult the communications majors here. Come on now.
The
communications finals were pretty easy.
I'm just saying, one of us had to study a little bit more during finals week than the other.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I'm sure one of them's taking the JFK assassination history course. That was a great course.
That was a fun course. You actually like studied for my final, and you didn't even have to take it.
I'm a nerd. What can I say?
Because you were interested. I guess just kind of maybe hit some KenPom numbers from Marquette that are kind of jumping out at me. Again, if you're not familiar with KenPom, they list so many statistics offensively and defensively on each team, like where they rank in so many different categories, and numbers highlighted in red are bad. Numbers highlighted in green are good. There's a lot of green on the defensive side for Marquette.
Yeah, I think you know, we KenPom even acknowledges it takes till about halfway through the season for the numbers to kind of lock into what they're going to be, because just the way statistics work and anomalies early in the data set and stuff like that. But we've got
the KenPom numbers are still kind of cooking. They're still kind of in the oven right now. But a lot of numbers on the defensive side where Marquette is in the top 50 or better, including defensively, I'm talking about opponents' 3-point percentage, 2-point percentage. Boy, Kansas State, by the way, missed a ton of 2-point shots. They really helped that 2-point percentage number.
They were worse at 2-point shots than we were.
They just could not hit anything, and part of that was Marquette's activity in the paint. So credit to Theo John and Jace Johnson and Ned Morrow. They and really everybody they got everybody got was getting their hands up in the paint and really altering shots. So again, numbers that Marquette is very good at defensively, like 50-ish or better. 3-point percentage defense, 2-point percentage defense, free throw percentage defense, if that's something you
really
take into account. Block percentage, shouts to Theo John. And overall, and this is probably the most important one, effective field goal percentage defense. That they are 15th in the country at the time we're recording this on Sunday. And so that is outstanding. That's a number that you just want to hug that and hope it stays, around there. Maybe if it varies down, five or 10 spots lower, that's still fine. But that effective field goal percentage defense number is something I just love to see right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so it turns out, like, the numbers are pretty indicative that this is a very solid defense. Obviously, they've benefited from, Jacksonville and Kansas State weren't exactly world beaters in terms of offense, but they've played some quality teams and have produced some quality defensive efforts that matter, right? Like, in fact, the Wisconsin game, I mean, Wisconsin's looking more and more like an anomaly. Wisconsin shot their best 3-point percentage against Marquette by far, and that was with hands in the face and stuff like that. So I think the defense is legit, and if this defense can stay top 30 in the country overall, and the offense continues to improve, this is a team that has a legitimate chance to challenge for a Big East regular season title.
Yeah, maybe. I think right now I'm just kind of looking at what they've done in the non-conference, assuming they take care of business in their last three bye games. They're going to get to Big East play at 10-2, which is, that's going to be pretty solid. I think you've built yourself a solid non-conference resume. Again, assuming you avoid any terrible losses to Grambling State, North Dakota State, or Central Arkansas, Marquette is better than 93% or better favorite to win all three of those games, according to KenPom. So if you finish non-conference play at 10-2, that includes road wins at Kansas State, neutral court wins over Davidson and USC, and a home court win over Purdue, that's a solid non-conference resume. Sure, there are some teams that maybe can boast a little bit better, but that's something, if you're a team that's just trying to get into the tournament, that's going to look pretty good. As long as you can take care of business, Big East play, hopefully be 500 or better, you should be fine to get into the tournament with that. That would just kind of be my gut. We'll see how the tournament seeding actually shakes out as the season goes along. But overall, I would have to say mission accomplished. Again, still some work to do just to take care of these bye games, but the toughest part of the non-conference schedule is behind Marquette, and I have to say, you know, job well done for the most part. Yeah, maybe you would like that Wisconsin game back, try to run that back, and maybe they don't shoot as crazy as they did. Maybe you could win that one, but no shame in losing to Maryland, who is they didn't lose a game this weekend. They're still undefeated, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, they are.
Undefeated.
So no shame in losing to Maryland, who's like a top 3-5 team in the country. So really, the only game you kind of regret is that Wisconsin game. Other than that, I think they did a pretty good job in non-conference play so far.
Absolutely, yeah. I think 7-2, I think I projected them to go 11-1 in non-conference. But, I mean, 10-2, that's, yeah, you could quibble over which teams you lost to for those two. But they did their job. They won at Davidson, so they ended up getting USC and Maryland on the resume. So their strength of schedule looks
right.
Really good for the non-conference. They've gotten the wins. The defense is certainly legit, it seems, at this point. So they did what they needed to do. We got pretty angsty there right around the Bobby Moe game.
Yeah.
Or the first half of the Davidson game. But, you know, I'm not saying we can seal up the bomb shelters, but I feel like we should feel fairly good about this team right now.
If you may remember, we got really angsty at the Presbyterian game last year.
That's true. That is true.
And, last year, for the most part, turned out pretty well. It was an ugly finish, but 24-10 last year and earning a 5 seed. Overall, I have to say that was a pretty solid season. And then, a little angsty over Robert Morris. Progress is being made, I think, on this team. We'll see how things look once Marquette gets into Big East play. I will say it was overall a pretty solid weekend for the Big East, especially Saturday. You know, freaking DePaul, starts to get a little pressed and goes out and loses to Dayton. So, sorry, hate to see that happen. But the Big East had really a great Saturday. They're off to a great start in the Big East, Big 12 Challenge. Georgetown got a couple wins after a disastrous week for them off the court. But the conference net, if that's a thing, or the conference strength of schedule, conference KenPom numbers, I think should be pretty favorable based on what the conference has done so far. I'm not sure the conference has like a legit Final Four contender or anything. Maybe Seton Hall could be that team. I have to say, like, especially Saturday, Villanova beat St. Joe's, their rival in the Big Five. Butler beat Florida, a team that was preseason top 10 and has really fallen off. St. John's beat West Virginia. That was probably surprising to some. Creighton beat Nebraska. Nebraska's really struggling. Xavier won the crosstown shootout with Cincinnati. Always love to see that. And then, Georgetown went and beat SMU after, again, they lost a couple players and maybe losing a couple more here. So, love what you saw for the Big East for the most part. And, again, DePaul, you got a little cocky and went out and lost to Dayton. Not a great job. And as we're recording this, Seton Hall is playing Iowa State. If they can pull out a win there, that would be good for the Big East. But can't say I'm rooting for Seton Hall either.
Yeah, well, and some weird, I'm not passing judgment, nor am I really diving into the details, but weird stuff going on at Georgetown that may or may not result in them blowing up.
Yeah, it's kind of a messy situation that I'm not sure I want to dive into because I really haven't read up on everything. But that could have been a program killer, and it may still be. But they got 2 wins this week, so good for the guys who are still left, I guess. But that could be an ugly situation going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to stay out of that one. But yeah, I mean, the Big East is again, kind of what's really positive about this, right, is like you need the Big East teams, even if the Big East is going to beat up on each other, you need teams to perform really well in the non-conference because that builds up, one, their strength of schedule and their metric numbers. But two, it forces some of the, I guess I'll say, media attention to talk about, hey, look at the Big East. Maybe they're a top two, top three basketball conference this year.
For what it's worth, so far, KenPom has Big East third behind the Big Ten and the Big 12.
Yeah, and I think the Big Ten's really just top heavy. I mean, top to bottom, I don't know that the Big Ten is that great, but we'll see. I mean, KenPom numbers are KenPom numbers, so we'll see how they shake out. But yeah, it's good to see the Big East overall performing. I just hope everybody but Marquette falls apart here starting January 1st. That would be ideal.
Yeah, before we get out of here, just kind of go back to what we were saying. We're kind of going through the KenPom numbers for Marquette. We said there's a lot of green on the defensive side. Just want to touch on the offensive side really quickly. Offensively, the three-point percentage is great. Top 10 in the country, number 9 at the time we're recording this. But other than that, there's still a lot of red. Marquette's two-point percentage, pretty bad there in the 300s. Block percentage, steal percentage, still turning the ball over. Thing is, a lot of those turnover issues earlier in the year when you've only played 9 games, that's still going to weigh you down. Overall, I'd say turnovers are still this team's biggest kind of bugaboo because they don't turn opponents over either. That's the one really red number on the defensive side. Their steal percentage is not very high. It's ranked 323 in the country. So that is maybe the one issue that when I look at this team that I'm not sure is going to totally go away over the course of the season. But again, some of the ugliness from earlier in the year are still kind of weighing down those numbers, and maybe they'll start to fade and maybe normalize as they kind of get into January. But that's the only thing that kind of jumps out as far as the red numbers. Obviously, the two-point percentage is not great. Hopefully, that gets up. But that's statistically the one thing that jumps out, I think, about Marquette is the turnover numbers are not great on either side.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to care for the ball more. I mean, I guess I was kind of encouraged against Kansas State because they didn't turn the ball over nearly as – they turned it over too much, but they didn't turn it over as much as I kind of thought they would. So yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I just kind of stick to this theory that I think the offense can continue to improve and get better as the season goes on, less so than defense. I kind of feel like if you're a good defensive team, maybe you improve a little bit as you go, but you are what you are from a defensive perspective. I feel like the offense can only get more efficient and better. So like you said, the 2-point percentage it's got to go up, but I guess if they're going to hit threes at the rate they're hitting, maybe that's the trade-off. But
why shoot twos when you could shoot threes?
I guess.
Especially if you're shooting at 41% as a team.
Yeah. It's not bad. So, I mean, we'll take what we can get, but we'll see. I just think, if you're heavily dependent on three-point shooting – you're subject to a lot more variability in terms of like just having an off shooting night, right? Whereas if you're shooting, if your offense is more inside the paint, yeah, you can have an off night, but you're less likely to just miss because, it's easier to hit a 2-point shot than it is a 3-point shot. That's why it's a 3-point shot.
If, basically what you're saying is if you shoot a lot of threes and make them, that can go really well. But if you shoot a lot of threes and miss them, that won't go well. There should be some kind of phrase that can really sum that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't think of one off the top of my head. But yeah, that's true. But Marquette, they kind of are what they are. That really wasn't what I was expecting this team to be at the beginning of the year. I thought we really only had one 3-point shooter, and from what we've seen so far, maybe they have a few more than that. We'll see if that continues. No games to break down this week because, again, Marquette has a week off, so we're not going to talk about the bye games just yet. We may touch on that when we touch base next week. So next week may be a short one as well because there are no games to break down at the beginning of next week's podcast that Marquette's going to play between now and then. But who knows? Maybe there'll be recruiting news between now and then that we can get excited about. But relatively short podcast this time around. We thank you guys for sticking with us here on Scrambled Eggs. I'm Joe McCann. Phil Bush on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. You can leave your comments there if you are not a Twitter user and comment on when we post the podcast. Go to Apple Podcasts. You can rate, review, and subscribe. Be sure to subscribe because that's when you will get the podcast sent straight to your phone when they are uploaded. And we have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. If that's your thing, we post the podcast there. Phil, any final thoughts as we head to finals week?
Let's not lose finals week.
Yeah, let's get a few W's during finals week, and then we can talk about some W's against some bye teams.
For sure.
Until next time, everyone, seashells and balloons.